All right. We are now. Let's do
it. Cool. Welcome to the Rockstar Triathlete Academy's coaching call for, well, it's February 2011, and this is the business of triathlon coaching call. And if you are in on the call right now, you can ask us your questions. Looks like we've got quite a few questions already in queue between the live Q&A and the forum. So I think that we should just dive right in. And if you happen to be listening to this and you're not part of the business of triathlon coaching membership at the Rockstar Triathlete Academy, it's very easy to do. You just go to rockstartriathlete.com and you join for a dollar, and you can at any time upgrade to a business of triathlon coaching membership, which is where you learn how to be a better triathlon coach. So that being said, what do you think, Kerry? Do you want to, you know, just to clarify, due to kind of a scheduling issue, we had two different links to this call. So it looks like some people left questions on one link and some people left questions on the other link. I've got both of them pulled up in front of me, but do you want to start with Ron's question or Alan's question, or which one do you want to go with, Kerry?
Let's go with Ron's is a lengthy one. So
we can split it into parts.
Yes. I guess I'm going to have to start. I'll start with Ron's. We'll start getting into that. This is Ben and Kerry. I've enjoyed learning a lot from you as a client of Ben's and a member of Rockstar Triathlete Academy in the last few months. I like the way you present and share information, although Ben can be a bit of a hard ass.
Uh-huh.
Okay. you're gonna pay for that, man. You're gonna have to do like 5 hours of burpees now and stuff. So all right, presently I am a member of the regional and national board of the YMCA and is in the process of a multi-million-dollar upgrade about 60% of our facilities, installing salt filter pools, building high-end fitness gym facilities, improving and adding fitness programs and program standards of many high-end health clubs. The YMCA played a major role in shaping me as a growing up in South Africa, Auckland, and England. But
hold on, I'm just going to try to skip to see what the questions were.
No offense, like.
Kerry, you want me to see if I can find it here? He starts with number one. Both of you compete in many different types of triathlon races around the globe. What has been the best source of finding out about those races? Why did you choose them? What one or two things stuck in your mind about the race organization and planning? Is there anything you would avoid if you were planning a triathlon race or festival? I guess I'll go ahead and start and then turn it over to you, Kerry.
Sure.
I have been to what I would consider to be the best international triathlon on the globe, and I've also been to what I probably consider to be, based on my own opinion and that of many others, possibly one of the last best. And the best, let's start with the good, was the Laguna Phuket Triathlon. And the reason that that is the best race and that's one that I chose to compete in based off of what I'd read about it in this case in Triathlete Magazine, which is a good place to find out about international races, as is Lava Magazine, as is the website tryfind.com. But what I liked about that race is, first of all, from the moment you show up, they take very good care of you. They have a central location where all of the race registration, the pre-race banquet and instructional ceremony takes place, the post-race ceremony takes place. You're provided with a map as soon as you show up, and there is a map at all of the host hotels that show you exactly where everything is taking place during the race week. Everything. So that if at any point you're wondering where you're supposed to be and when, you have it right there in front of you. And they also email that to you several times leading up to the event. There are multiple events surrounding the event that are also well-publicized, and you know exactly when things are going to start and where to be. So, for example, for like a pre-race preview of the bike course, it's right there. You know right where it's going to be. It's on the schedule. People show up. They close off the entire course, the police escorts, the cones, the markings, everything. It's just like you're in the race itself, except it's just a preview of the course. So very, very smart from a liability perspective and also from a perspective of really letting people know what the course is going to be about. Very well marked, great maps provided for the swim, bike, and the run. Transition area laid out very well, carpeted, bike tech right there next to the transition, medical tent right there, clearly marked. The entire week leading up to the race, you feel like royalty. When you finish the race, you feel like royalty. Free massages. Great food, not just a slice of pizza, but, you know, 10 different forms of Thai food and pots and pans. And then post-race party, off the hook, free alcohol to a limited extent. You get tickets for the alcohol, food, just a complete buffet. They spare no expense. You feel like your money was well spent, and it's just a fabulous event. And you can tell that it's been around for a while because the race director actually has all these contacts with the police, with the city, with the volunteers. He relies a lot on the local people in the same way that the WTC does. But the difference between a race like that and, like, say, the WTC events is that even though the WTC is just as well organized and they do a good job letting you know where to go and when, they don't make you feel necessarily like royalty, I don't think, in the same way that a race like this does. And then as far as the worst race, I would have to say the worst event to you so far. They did not tell you where to go or when. The course was poorly marked or not even marked in many spots. Poor aid, not many water stations, not many emails from the race director leading up to the race. Even though a beautiful location, basically you finished the race and you didn't even know when the award ceremony was, and when it happened, it was like, yo, here's your medal, good job. And that was the race down in Jamaica, the Rose Hall Triathlon, which I enjoyed immensely, but probably it's because I kind of like adventure and not really knowing what's going on, and I know most of the people there did not like that at all. So those are my thoughts on the best and the worst races, and I'll let Kerry kind of tell you about his experiences.
The best race I have ever done was World Championships in the ITU race in Lausanne, Switzerland, and kind of a lot of the same reasons Ben liked his. More than anything, it's just really smooth run, professional operation, you know, where everything's going to be. Everything is on a pretty strict timetable with those guys, which, you know, if you're not there checking in at the exact time that you're supposed to, you know, they actually even break it down into, like, alphabetical, like, order, your name falls within the alphabet is supposed to go out. Get to hit that, and then also just with pre-race and stuff like that, they're pretty strict in terms of, like, you got to be in such and such an area at such and such a time, or you're like, you're just not racing flat out. They, you know, there's a few things that you have to go through like that, but it was really well run. Transition was great, you know, all carpeted out, which is great, and more than anything, probably for me, was the location. It was beautiful. It was on Lake Geneva, and you can see the Alps and everything like that. And it was just a beautiful day. It was like real nice warm weather and everything like that. And everything like that. I would say they make you feel especially like royalty, like Ben was saying. I've been to other small races where they like really truly appreciate you doing well that way. And that's kind of like a staff and organizational thing more than anything. So
Those are good. And then obviously, like Ben was saying, some of the things I like too, like you get like a good food spread at the end. It's not just like, you know, like 100 like pizzas or whatever in a solid day. So something pretty decent. Usually like if a good restaurant puts it on or something like that, does the catering, it's pretty damn good. So that's been good. In terms of, yeah, just having it well organized. And like Ben said, like, you know, you go some of the good races I've been to where they just give you like a booklet and it's kind of like a program for the whole race. And it just tells you where everything is and where everything's marked out. It gives great maps on there as well as online stuff. Something you might want to look into too is making a phone app. I think that would be great. You know, some events I've been to recently have, not triathlons, but just other events, have had actual phone apps. Just on things I've been through and that you can get for the iPhone, and it's got the whole schedule and maps and everything like that. I think that would be a great thing to do for big triathlons, too. I think that would be really useful. For the worst races I've been to, just really more than anything, poor organization. Not getting there, you know, having the race start like 30 minutes late or telling people different things about the course, you know, giving out different directions. Like that's been bad. And also just like courses are really dangerous. I don't like where, for instance, they'll have the same runners and cyclists on the
Gary,
same road.
Gary, you broke up there for a second.
Okay. Sorry about that.
You're talking about races that were dangerous?
Yeah, I don't like races that are, where they have dangerous setups in terms of just, they don't have the course well roped off or cyclists and runners are on the same road. I'm not a big fan of that. That's just not a good call. Making sure, you know, the cycling course and the running course are two separate, like, you know, areas and everything like that. And also having the transition area all in the same area. You know, I've done races where it's like two different transition areas and things like that. And logistically, it's a huge pain in the ass. And at the end of the day, it's not fun for the people at the race watching either. So that's what I'd have to say on that. Let's go on to question number two on here. It says, I asked a question about the coaches forum and did not get a reply from anyone. I think it may come across as putting everyone on the spot, but I wasn't doing that. The YMCA certifies all of its coaches and instructors, whether it is a U.S. Masters swimming coach, Jimmy G, NSCA, ASCA, ISSN, et cetera. We support all governing sports organizations, which our club members participate in, USA Triathlon, et cetera. However, we do find that many certifications as being a great thing which to have in our resume, but not really needed for attracting members and clients in does not make a coach. The USAT coaching certificate is one which is in question due to the issue of obtaining it, the expense and eliteness which has been established of processing it. I understand why this has occurred, but it also may be the death of the sport if not correct by USAT. He's said the money seems to be motivated behind it. So here is the question. Do you feel we have our Y coach? Do you feel that we should have our Y coach, all USAT certified, to move forward with the program, or do you think it can be implemented over a period of time? Tell us the perspective of a newbie, which I know you have coached. Do you think it is worth the coaching certificate, the dedication factor on why to choose a client as a coach? I've got the USA Triathlon certificate or coaching certification. I went through all the stuff for it. I think it's well done. And, you know, both Ben and I are part of the NSCA, or, you know, the CSCS guys. There's also a personal trainer certificate through it. And, both those organizations are harder
organizations to get certificates through. I've also gotten certification through NASM, IFPA, and I had someone else in there too. I can't remember it. But those two are definitely like the more elite and harder ones to get for sure. Oh, I had USA Cycling for a while too. I think those certifications, I mean, personally, I look at it when someone has one of those certifications, and I do look at them on a little bit of a higher par, because you do have to know your stuff more to get one of those certifications. Now, does that make you a good coach? Not necessarily, but you know that at least that they're semi sharp in terms of having to know their stuff. Does it mean that you know it is a tricky question, because you know you can get some people who don't have any certifications at all and know their stuff inside and out and do a great job as a coach. And you know, I think though that with the certification, that is kind of a good standard to go by and just kind of see what's going on there. And go at it that way. You know, with saying that USA Triathlon, the money is the motive behind it. They put on a good course there, and you know, any kind of courses that you're doing in of any quality, you know, are going to cost money. And you know, at the end of the day, it's a business too, so they're going to make money too. So I wouldn't totally rip on them for doing that either. But that's kind of my two cents on that. Ben, what do you think?
I think that when you're an organization as big as the YMCA and you are starting a program like this Y-Tri program that Ron is talking about, you have a certain degree of regularity that you have to maintain across the board. Small organization, local gym, might be able to just hire a triathlon coach, such as myself, off the street. I don't have a USA Triathlon coaching certification. I've been coaching and training people for a decade. I have advanced degrees in the field, tons of experience, tons of certifications in nutrition and training and strength conditioning. I don't happen to have a USAT coaching certification. Why? Because I always found it to be inconvenient when I was trying to get one. And the material covered in that certification is stuff that I've got completed, you know, 5-6 years ago. So the only reason I'd be getting it is to be able to slap a logo on my business card or on my website and take advantage of some of the ongoing educational services that the USAT offers, which I pretty much go ahead and take care of myself since I actually teach at the USAT coaching seminars. So the deal with this is that I think it is a good idea for Y-Tri or for the YMCA's triathlon coaching program that you actually do require the coaches to be USAT certified, because you're covering your butt. You're making sure that you're not getting mavericks coming in off the streets who may have learned how to coach 10 or 20 years ago, and maybe they aren't keeping up with the latest research and the latest data. You know, it's just like a doctor. You can have somebody who's got an MD, and from what I understand, there are certain continuing education requirements for doctors, and you wouldn't necessarily just want to hire any physician off the street who didn't have an MD, who might be, you know, a physician of something else who doesn't have that ongoing education certification or knowledge. So what it comes down to is that, frankly, the USAT coaching certification is hard to get, but they are a dime a dozen. You can find USAT coaches anywhere. I don't think you're going to have any problem having a lack of coaches for your Y-Tri program because there's a long line for the USAT coaching certification. So I really wouldn't worry about that too much. That's my thought on that. And then to address your final question, Ron, what one major thing comes to mind which the YMCA triathlon coaching / training should include and not forget in our program besides having fun? I think that you really need to make sure that you have a strong emphasis on nutrition. And the reason that I think that is because most triathletes, have a good ethic of training. They're willing to work hard. When you give them workouts, they're willing to do them. They're willing to put in the time. But in my experience, most triathletes also eat like crap and set themselves up for chronic diseases like cancer and diabetes down the road because they didn't take care of their bodies from a nutritional standpoint. So I think that you need to not necessarily preach one single diet in your Y Tri program for the YMCA, but I think that you do need to educate people heavily on the options and also put the research in front of them that shows what things like a high starch, high sugar diet can do down the road to insulin sensitivity, and explain to them how that works. It's a very easy concept to understand. If you go over to my website, trainfortopdollar.com, you'll see that right now I have a series of articles that are basically focused on how to teach your clients and the people that you work with about nutrition. And it's just real, real basic stuff, but it's the stuff that I think a lot of coaches and programs don't emphasize enough in terms of making sure that people understand that when they come in to the YMCA and they do, you know, like my wife was just in the YMCA this morning. She did the mini triathlon over at the YMCA. I guarantee that half the people in there walked over to the little Jamba Juice that's inside the YMCA and they got like a 600-calorie smoothie full of sucralose and, you know, table sugar and hydrogenated peanut butter. So I think that that's something that you need to educate people on. Carrie, what do you think?
Yeah, I think what Ben said is bang on, because a lot of people think just because they do a triathlon they're in good shape too, and even if you look in good shape and you're not eating healthy, you can still have clogged arteries and everything else. And I do think that diet plays a huge role in things. So Ben's point, I definitely agree with. Also, I'd say technique with the swimming and the running, especially the running. I think that would go really far. In terms of showing people how to really run correctly, because you can really save a lot of pounding on the body by doing that too, and makes people actually want to run when they know how to do it correctly. So that's what I would have to say on that.
Cool. Well, what do you think? Should we move on?
Yes, let's move on.
So the next question it looks like we have is, it doesn't say who asked this question, but it says, when attending expos or giving clinics or seminars as a coach or personal trainer, what should you wear? Suit and tie would be over the top, it seems, but what is more accepted or more professional looking?
Tuxedo.
Tuxedo, that's right. Well, Carrie, what would you wear if you were giving a clinic or a seminar or attending an expo like we are attending tomorrow in San Diego?
I would wear what I always wear, to be honest with you. I just wear like my standard shorts in terms of, I used to be a soccer player, so I wear like soccer type shorts all the time or like board shorts and t-shirt. That's it. That's who I am. You know what I think, honestly, there's a time and place for everything, but I think you got to be yourself. And you got to be comfortable with who you are and things like that. And, wear clothes that you would normally wear and be yourself and that you feel comfortable in. And just do that, you know. And if you really show them that you know your stuff and everything like that, and you kind of stick out maybe a little bit with your clothing that way or whatever, and you're not doing the typical thing, then I think people will like that. They'll respect that. So, that's what I would tell you. What I wear is kind of the typical personal trainers wear. You know, it's like the Adidas shorts and some kind of tech t-shirt or whatever, Adidas shirt or whatever, or whatever it may be, or K Swiss, right, Ben?
Right.
Stuff. So that's what I'd say. Tomorrow, Ben and I are actually going to this is more of a conference, and it's just kind of like some business people within triathlon. And actually, I'm probably just going to wear pretty much the same thing, except it's supposed to be a little cooler where we're going, so I'll wear some Under Armour pants and, like a long-sleeve T-shirt or something like that.
Yeah, I feel like a chick talking about this. It's still kind of funny. What are you wearing? What were this? But anyway, Ben, what are your thoughts?
Sexy. First of all, it's one of the things that can actually help you get sponsored for your coaching business if you can form relationships with people. You know, for example, I'm sponsored by ChampSys, and I have an agreement with ChampSys that when I attend expos, like I'll be at tomorrow, seminars, when I teach, et cetera, that I will, whenever possible and socially acceptable, wear the clothing that they've supplied me with that has their logo on it, but also has my Ben Greenfield Fitness logo and the logos of all the sponsors who I work with. And that's really a great way because it's a win-win. The company supplies you with your threads, and then you're able to have something to wear that looks professional, hopefully, if you're working with the right company, and also promotes your brand and their brand wherever you are. So in most cases, because triathlon expos and seminars are in athletic situations, lots of times there are things like bicycles being demonstrated, you know, like take Interbike, for example. You know, you can go try trainers, you can go sample bicycles. So generally to a triathlon or a cycling style expo, I will wear a pair of like athletic shorts. And then I'll do like a pullover, like a warm-up on top of those in case I want to like strip down to my shorts and try something out or demo something. And then usually just like a loose-fitting top with a coat on over that. When I'm teaching a seminar or a clinic, generally it just depends on where it's at. I've taught in a suit before. I've taught in jeans and a tucked-in collar before. I mean, it really depends on where you're teaching your seminar. My favorite thing to do a seminar in is just like jeans, pair of cowboy boots, a comfortable shirt, and a vest. That's typically what you're gonna see me in. So hopefully that helps out. And yeah, let's go ahead and move on to the next question from Alan. Looks like a few different parts on the question. So I'll go ahead and read the first part. When is the best time of day to post or to tweet? Carrie, what do you think?
That, you know, it depends on who you go off that. You know, ultimately, I'd say if you're putting links out there and you can track them, track it for yourself, because the people that actually follow you might be on a different schedule. You know, triathletes are a little bit different than most people. We're a little bit more busy and things like that. And so, you know, you might get more of a response different. Typical, I've heard that basically it's, you know, depending on what source you go from, it's like Monday through Friday, and it's kind of like the late afternoon, which is like the best for that, is one general rule of thumb. But it also kind of depends who you listen to on that. But, you know, with that stuff, if you can track it yourself and look at your own results, that's going to be the best way to find out. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, Carrie is 100% correct. Your audience is going to dictate when you're supposed to tweet and do your post. For example, we work with an athletic audience. Most websites, like social media websites, will tell you that Saturday morning is a very good time to post. Well, guess what? All the people reading my blog are out working out on Saturday morning. And if I post something, they're not going to see it, and it's going to be covered up by a bunch of other posts by the time they come back from their workout. You know, the same can be said for, kind of in the evenings, like around 5 to 7. A lot of people get off work, they come home, they bang around on the computer. People reading my posts, they're at the gym after work. So that's another time that I try to avoid posting. Typically, I will post, like, midday when I know people are kind of like getting back from lunch hour, whether they're exercising or eating, and it'll be one of the first things that they see is they check their email or their Twitter before they get back to work. The other time that I will post sometimes is Sunday evening, which is another time when people are kind of done working out and they're in front of computers. So that's that. What do you think, Carrie? You want to move on to the next part?
Yeah, I'm actually having a hard time pulling that those questions up. Can you tell me what the next question is?
Yes. The next question is, what are the best books, magazines, and websites for coaches to learn more about coaching endurance athletes?
Okay. Any of your stuff I like? I like the Journal of Strength and Conditioning. Let's see. I like magazines. You know, sometimes I pick up stuff within the magazines like Triathlete and Lava and stuff like that. But for the most part, I find that stuff pretty generic, unless there are like actual publication journals out there. There's some really good ones too. The let me blank in on the acronym for it. NSCA's got some good publications. What's the other one though? Sports medicine.
Are you thinking of the ACSM?
Yeah, ACSM, American College of Sports Medicine. They've got some good stuff out there as well in terms of just like things like that. I like stuff by our main man JC Santana. He's good. Anytime I can read stuff by actual strength and conditioning coaches that are out there doing stuff in the field is good. There's a triathlon coach, and I'm blanking on it. Dr. Phil Skiba, that's his name. He's got some good stuff out there. It's all interesting. And then Maximum Performance Cycling, that's an interesting read. That's a good book. I think – can't remember the doctor that wrote that book. That's good. So those are the basic ones. I like the Pose books. I think there's a lot of good stuff in there with technique and things like that. So those are some of the resources I like, and there's new stuff always coming out. So, yeah, that's just a general synopsis on that. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I would recommend some of those that you recommended, especially the National Strength Conditioning Association's journal is very good. The other things that I would look into would be a good website is ptonthenet.com, like personaltrainingonthenet.com. They've got a lot of really good content. If you're working in a physical facility, Athletic Facilities puts out a journal called, I believe it's just called Athletic Facilities Journal. For coaching, of course, we can't talk about without mentioning, my website, trainfortopdollar.com. That's a good one. There's another one called PT Power, which stands for Personal Training Power. PTPower.com has some good stuff. Kind of more along the lines of personal training, a lot of brick and mortar stuff on there. That's a good one. Any of like the Key or the Pose type of running books that Carrie recommended, or any of the more advanced triathlon books. And then if you really want to get down into the nitty gritty of the science, some of the really good ones are The Lore of Running by Tim Noakes. Joe Friel, his newer book is actually really good for learning some of the ins and outs of periodization. I forget, it's called, Big Book of Endurance Training, something like that. A few others would be if you want to get into like looking at what your athletes are doing when they're out training, physiological measurements in endurance athletes is a good one. Biochemical markers in athletes is another good one. Any exercise physiology or biochemistry textbook, you know, those are a lot of the things that I have on my shelf. And then like again, getting into more of like the marketing and the business coaching stuff, you know, the list is very expansive in terms of like self-help marketing books. But as far as some of the ones that I like, Value Reporting Revolution kind of teaches you a little bit about cost accounting and keeping track of your own time. That one's called Value Reporting Revolution. What's another good one? There's one about writing called Copy Blogger. .com. That's another one that I follow that I really like when it comes to learning how to write effectively. What else? Stephen Gary has a good book called Four Steps to the Epiphany. Four Steps to the Epiphany is basically about like starting companies, running companies, etc. As far as like pricing, there's another good one called The Price of Everything by Eduardo Porter. That's another good one. That should be a list to kind of get you started, but those are some of the ones that I would definitely look into. And then what companies are good to get liability insurance from? Carrie, what do you think?
You know what? I don't know the companies I get liability insurance through, but I get it through the NSCA. I don't know the tech companies that do it. The NSCA and the USA Triathlon, whoever they go through, those are the two companies I get my – I've got liability insurance through both of them because it can be a little tricky in terms of if you're training people in the water. They're – you know, both of them will cover you for different things. Being a CSCS, we're also a little trickier to cover, too, because we do, like, powerlifting. So I just go off the two companies they use and just use that. So I don't actually know what the name of those companies are, though. Which is kind of bad, but that's kind of my personality.
Well, I actually, you know, I'm in the same boat. I get my insurance through the NSCA, and the thing is, they've changed carriers three times since I've been with them, and so after the first couple times, I just kind of quit keeping track of who I was insured through, and went with the NSCA because whenever I shop around, it's always the best deal. And you know, it's like a $2 million coverage that.
Yeah.
That has me covered anywhere on the globe in terms of prescribing fitness, et cetera. So that's the one that I go with, and I would definitely go through your certification organization. That'd really be the best way to do it. So you're going to find the best deal. In my experience, that's what I found. So the next question, what other forms of income can coaches look into besides just online coaching?
A lot of things. I mean, basically the sky's the limit, really, if you want to get creative with it. There's group coaching, team coaching, individual coaching. You can make all kinds of products. You can make books. You can make DVDs. You can set up things through – you can set up a wide variety of things through gyms. You can set up you can set up ways of making income through shops where, you know, you, any one person that they send you to coach or whatever, you know, you cut them back, you give them a percentage of that commission. You can set up all kinds of things through shops too. Again, you can set up teams through shops. You can set up, just like little seminars through shops. I mean, basically, you know, one of the good things is like a lot of the triathlon coaches out there, they don't really think too outside the box in terms of making income. But if you look at how other people are doing it within the industry or making a lot of money, whoever's out there, you know, killing it, like the P90X guys, kind of look at the different ways that they do it and set things up, or just anyone in basically any industry to really set things up in an innovative way. There's something you can usually take away from all those guys and apply it to what you're doing. So really, I tell you, man, the sky's the limit. I mean, there's like thing after thing after thing that you can do. Those are just some of the few things that I was talking about right there. But I'm sure Ben's got a lot. He could chime on to that one too.
Yeah. Online coaching, I actually don't really recommend that as the first thing for a triathlon coach, especially a new triathlon coach, to turn to for their cutting their triathlon coaching chops. If you haven't stood on a track for hours on end and watched people run, if you haven't been walking up and down the pool watching people swim, if you haven't been in the same room with people riding their bikes, getting in their face, testing them, prodding at them, you know, poking them, kind of seeing what goes on as they're training, then I really don't think that you have much business doing online coaching. So first of all, get into the trenches. Okay, once you've understood that and you've gotten into the trenches and you've worked with athletes and you've seen the way that the body responds and you know how to motivate people, then yeah, you could take that and you could replicate it digitally. But I mean, I put in a lot of time in the trenches before I decided to kind of maximize or leverage my time a little bit more and begin coaching people online. But in addition to that, like Carrie says, group coaching, both face-to-face and online, individual coaching, face-to-face, getting lactate meters, CO2 max testing equipment, things of that nature, testing people, filming people underwater, doing swim, bike, run, video analysis, writing and selling ebooks, audio programs, blogging, setting up affiliate relationships, setting up website reviews, setting up membership websites. You can form relationships with nutritional companies, warehouse and sell products or dropship products. You can basically just the sky's the limit. I did a huge webinar for the USAT on the multiple forms of income that you can do and talk for like 2 hours on it. I mean, we could just go on and on and on. Tons of things you can look into, but the red flag in your question is what are other forms of income coaches can look into besides just online coaching? I would say that when we're talking about income for triathlon coaches, unless you've been doing it for a long time, the first thing that you should be thinking about is straight up face-to-face coaching with, you know, with people that are standing right there. So, how do you go about implementing a video analysis for swim, bike, and run? Camera equipment, tripod, backdrop, lights, waterproof housing, waterproof bag, etc. Carrie, any feedback on that one?
Let's see, for swimming, I'm blanking on the name of this one too, but there's basically a stick that you can get, that you can attach a video camera to that will, look at the stroke underwater. That's probably one of your best bets in terms of getting, and looking at people underwater aside from going from something super high tech. And there's actually some pools that may have it. You can look into it where they'll actually have a track underwater that will go up and down the pool with a camera. Those are some of the really advanced pools though, and I don't know if you're readily going to find that. So probably, a camera with a stick on it, that's going to be your best bet. In terms of, looking at someone on the bike, usually stationary is going to probably be your best bet and the easiest thing to replicate, at looking someone, on the bike there. And then also with, you can use a treadmill. I don't really like to use the treadmill to look at people's technique because it's not, they can't really, a lot of the time they can't get the same kind of forward lean, that they might, when they're outside and things like that. So I like to actually look at them on a track. So if you can get them on a track and record them that way, that's a good way to do it. And then in terms of software out there to use, you can use, Dartfish, or there's other types of technology out there, too, that you can use, and you can actually, draw lines in the person's body and kind of show them, where they're making, mistakes in their biomechanics or where they're breaking down or whatever, through the lines that you can draw on their body and, just, connecting the dots and things like that, on them, through those displays. So that's kind of a overview of that. Then what do you think?
Yeah, for the swim, there are tons of options. You can get the coach cam, which is the camera on a pole. You can take your regular camera and put it inside a waterproofed swim bag with some little desiccation tablets to remove moisture. You can get any number of underwater cameras from a website like Walmart, or go to Walmart. And, you know, I have a Sanyo underwater video camera. I was over at the Team Timex camp in New York over the weekend, basically filming them doing their workouts. That's another thing that you could do. The other thing that, of course, you want to do with the water is have, if you have something like a coach cam, you have to have another camera that you can hook up to it for overwater analysis. But analysis for the swim, I do overwater front, overwater side, overwater back, underwater front, underwater side. When you're doing the run, you generally want to have a stationary camera on a tripod. You want to have a blank background beside and in front of the runner. You want to have them running at varying paces. I usually collect data at an aerobic pace, at a tempo pace, and then at closer to an all-out pace. And I film from the back and from the side. And there are multiple video analysis platforms out there that allow you to speed up or slow down the video that you take. My favorite, slightly expensive, but I do like it, is Dartfish. because it just has a ton of features and great analysis capabilities. I always look at the basic running gait broken down into heel strike, toe off, and swing. For the bike, generally you aren't going to get too much unless you have a real, real high-speed camera, in which case front analysis, side analysis, rear analysis, looking at things like the varus and valgus movement of the knee in and out or laterally and medially in and out or away from the top tube, the feet, you know, whether they're rotated medially or laterally, etc. But video analysis for the bike usually don't get a whole lot from. Those are things that I use. I usually don't really look much into like lighting other than just make sure that there's very good lighting. So that's that. And then finally, a question that came across the forum that we still need to respond to, and that is, what does being a coach mean to you? And specifically, the follow-up to that was, to me, a coach is the kind of person who'd rather talk about you than themselves. So, Carrie, for you, what would you say being a coach means to you?
Being a coach to me means that someone comes to you with their goals and you show them how to reach it. They tell you what you want, you show them how to get it.
Yeah. For me, being a coach is being able to be immersed in a sport that I love and have an incredible passion for. I love to compete in it. I love to watch it. I love to see others compete in it, and being able to take my love of learning and my love of educating and teaching and being able to meld it to that sport is something that I derive a great deal of personal pleasure from. It's very fulfilling to me to be able to educate someone, and for the purpose of me educating them is to be able to see them succeed in a sport that I love. You know, what can be better than that? You know, for being able, if you're an educator or a teacher, to be able to educate or teach something that you really love to do yourself. So for me, from a personal standpoint, I simply just derive a great deal of pleasure out of teaching and out of teaching something that I love. And from a charitable perspective, what it means is that you can help lots of people achieve something that they get very happy about. And I think that that's good for them and good for me. And so that is what being a coach is to me, is teaching and helping others to achieve doing something that I love and that they love. And hopefully I don't make them not love it. That wraps up our last question.
I think it does. So thanks for all the great questions, and we'll see you guys on the next call.
All right. This is Ben and Carrie signing out from RockstarTriathlete.com.